3:07, the show, well, one of us likes to call Lawrence and Taylor. I prefer Taylor and Lawrence, but we'll go with the boss's decision today. He's not here. Jeremy has the day off on the way to the NAB meeting in Lansing this evening. And so we have Roger unplugged, so to speak. We're going to do some of the usual things this afternoon. We're going to give away a couple of tickets to Need for Speed. The movie premieres this weekend, starts Friday. And at some time during the show, I'll decide when we're going to give tickets away. I'm relishing having the control of the tickets this afternoon. Derek has come up with a trivia question, and we will, when I decide, we will give away those tickets as the afternoon wears on. One of the topics that Jeremy and I have talked about fairly regularly, and I think there is a fair amount of agreement on our part that the minimum wage needs to be increased, that it hasn't kept up with the cost of inflation. One of the reasons we're seeing so many people qualify for assistance programs like food stamps is because the minimum wage hasn't kept up with the cost of living. Well, what we're going to attempt to do today is to give you some information from a neutral party. Gilda Jacobs, the president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy, is going to join us. And the Michigan League for Public Policy has developed a way to see what you need to make in the counties that make up our state to make ends meet. And good afternoon, Gilda. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Roger. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking time to talk with us. This new tool that you've developed, Making Ends Meet in Michigan, tell us a little about it.
Well, this is we actually do something like this every couple of years. What we do is we go county by county in the in our state to show what it actually takes to meet basic needs. So we look at housing, childcare, food, transportation, sort of miscellaneous like clothing, household personal phone expenses, and health care. Calculate that for a couple of different family sizes, a single adult, a single parent, two parents where both are working, and two parents where one might be working, based on two kids under the age of five. And we also, and this isn't a booklet, but it is downloadable. You can actually get this information from our website, which is mlpp.org. And we also have a very nifty thing also online right now. It's a calculator where you can actually go online, plug in where you live, number of kids, et cetera, and the calculator will calculate actually how much you need to earn an hour in order to meet those needs. So I would encourage your listeners to be able to go in and access both of these things.
And
what's very interesting is that, you know, we have a big state. We have, you know, different conditions in all different parts of the state. So what you may find in Kalamazoo may be very different than what you find in Oakland County or Kent County or, you know, Iron County, whatever.
Sure.
You can go in and do an actual comparison.
Now, you say you do this every couple of years. Were there any real surprises in the current data that's online?
Well, it's not that there's surprises. I think what, you know, the point that this data ends up showing is that that in order for people to be able to survive and support their families, is they actually need even more than the minimum wage usually to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the report, I mean, and this is without any kind of savings for a medical emergency, putting money away to save for a car or maybe some tuition for your kids or any luxuries. This is
or
really,
saving for retirement.
Or saving for retirement, exactly. And we're actually assuming in this that workers have a car. We're not even putting in a car payment in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the surprise is for you know, not so much for us, but for some people that are looking at this is, boy, you know, where some people think, oh, minimum wage, for example, is fine and doesn't need to be tweaked at all. And then when you actually see, you know, bare bones budgets, I think it's a very telling thing, and it really causes people to take some pause to say, I didn't really realize that. One of the things is that child care is one of the biggest expenses, no mm-hmm. matter what county that you're in.
Sure.
And that can, depending on if there's, some family help or if one parent is staying home and you know, watching the child, that's sort of a figure that can be changed. Some of the other ones can't. I mean, your mortgage payment or your rent, you know, pretty much stays the same. Food
mm-hmm.
stays the same. Child care is a huge problem, and actually having quality child care is really, really important because we really want to be sure that kids get the best start that they can have, and that all starts with child care, quite honestly, at a very early age.
Sure. We're talking with Gilda Jacobs, the president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy. Let's take a look at Kalamazoo,
sure.
If you don't mind. And you're correct. It's easy to find mlpp.org. And you can click on an interactive map on your county, and it brings up what the minimum wage is and what it should be in your county. In Kalamazoo, the current minimum wage is obviously $7.40 an hour. That's the entire state. A single adult needs $11.04 an hour. A single parent needs $23.04. Two parents, where they're both working, need to make $13.55, and two parents where only one parent works need to make $14.55. How does that compare with the state average for these? What the wages should be? How does the minimum wage in Kalamazoo, the needed minimum wage, compare with other counties?
Sure. Well, if you take a look at the state averages, in Michigan, if there was single person, no kids, they would need to be making $10.37. A single parent family with two kids, $21.23. A two parent family, both working, $12.58 each. And two-parent family, one working, $12.85.
So the Kalamazoo area is a higher cost area to make ends meet.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Where should the minimum wage have be if it had kept pace with the cost of inflation? Would the if there was compensation for inflation, would these numbers be dramatically different of what's needed in the state?
No, if minimum wage had been indexed for inflation mm-hmm. over the years, parents would be able to meet their basic needs. And there would be less of a need for public assistance, for food assistance and some other kinds of assistance.
Mm-hmm.
So we've actually, while we've been, the state has actually been subsidizing businesses, you know, if you will, because businesses have not been paying a minimum wage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you do the calculations and people then become available to or eligible, I should say, to get certain public assistance programs.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a number of large corporations that their business model depends on the government picking up some of the support for their employees. That's just their business model.
Correct.
What would the minimum wage be in Michigan if it had been tied to inflation?
That's a good question. I don't have that
okay.
right off the bat.
Okay. where in the state are lower cost places to live, and what's the disparity between the two? If Kalamazoo is one of the more expensive places,
right.
Where's the least expensive place in Michigan?
If we'll look at Iron County, for example. Housing there is 406. We'll look at a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
That housing there is $626. Child care there is $1,054. So that's a big difference. You look at Lake County, for example.
Okay.
That's a lower place.
Sure.
That's a lower place to live. Kind of flipping through the book.
Well,
you see a lot of the western and the northern parts of the state. Southeast Michigan is more expensive to live. Oakland County is a more expensive county.
Washtenaw appears to be the most expensive place. I was surprised that Kalamazoo was less expensive than Grand Traverse County. I would have expected Traverse City to be at the top of the heap in expense, and it's actually less expensive than Kalamazoo and a lot less than Washtenaw County.
Right.
Where do we stand in getting the state? What are you hearing from legislators? Is there concern about the minimum wage, and is there anything likely to happen at the state level?
Well, I would be surprised if there was there while there has legislation has been introduced in both the House and in the Senate, I would imagine that it would not be taken up by the majority party. There is, however, an effort going on right now to get enough ballot signatures to put this on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a group that is actively collecting signatures right now. I believe they need about 260,000
yeah.
signatures by the end of May.
It's a percentage of the voter turnout in the last election,
correct.
If I recall.
Right, there's a formula.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would anticipate that they will be successful getting enough signatures for that to go on the ballot. Now, the last time this happened years ago, the legislature did get a little nervous and ended up making a change to the minimum wage, because they didn't want it to go to the ballot. I'm not hearing that through the grapevine right now.
Uh-huh.
You never know. You know, we never know what might happen.
Gilda, what would their concern have been of letting the voters make the decision?
Well, I think they were concerned that the voters would vote to raise the minimum wage, and they wanted to, the legislature, certain legislators, wanted to have more control over it and not raise it as high as what had been suggested. So they decided to basically cut a deal and get it done legislatively.
Yeah. Well, we've seen some evidence that it isn't politically oriented. And where in New Jersey, Chris Christie was reelected quite handily. And at the same time, the voters raised the minimum wage and overruled his veto.
Right,
of
exactly.
A minimum wage increase.
I think people really do understand. Well, there's actually been polling in Michigan that has been very favorable to raising the minimum wage.
Yeah.
I think people understand businesses in Michigan have gotten a lot of tax cuts,
mm-hmm.
That those tax cuts have been balanced on the backs of low and middle income people,
mm-hmm.
and that they really do understand that it takes more than minimum wage to raise families. So I think that message is really kind of getting through, and I think people want to have some voice with this.
Well, yes. And it's clear if we want to reduce the number of people who are dependent on government subsidies, then we've got to get people above the poverty line.
Sure.
It's very simple.
Right.
The growth in those programs is because there's so many poor people.
Yep. And, you know, we know that when we put money into people's pockets, they spend it locally.
Mm-hmm.
They need it to buy more food for their kids, to buy shoes for their kids, to put gas in their cars, to maybe or scrape together enough to buy an automobile,
mm-hmm.
That may be more reliable than the one that they have. So it really is an economic stimulus.
Yeah. They don't put their money in offshore bank accounts in the Cayman Islands.
Correct.
It is much more likely to be spent putting food on the table tomorrow. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I appreciate your taking time to talk with us this afternoon, Gilda.
Thank you so much for your wonderful questions. I appreciate being on the show.
You bet. Have a good one. Gilda Jacobs, President and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy. There is some background on the increasing the minimum wage. Let's open up the phone lines. 382-4280, 877-382-4280. Did you hear anything in that or in looking at their website where you can calculate what the actual cost of living is in various counties in the state? Do you see anything surprising? And what's your takeaway from that? Our numbers again, 382-4280, 877-382-4280. Give me a call. Let's talk about this. WKZO. It's the Lawrence and Taylor show. Well, half of it at least today. We'll both be back in the studio tomorrow. And later in the show, we're going to give away a couple of tickets to the movie Need for Speed. All you'll have to do is answer Derek's trivia question. He's come up with a good one. And if you answer it correctly, you'll get a couple of tickets to go see the Need for Speed. And we don't need that this afternoon. A lot of slush out there on the roads. And soon, here in the next about 10 minutes, we're going to talk with AccuWeather, and we'll find out if slush is going to melt before it freezes this evening. We've got 31 degrees on the outside, but they're talking down below zero tonight. And so we'll find out just how crispy crunchy our roads are going to be tomorrow morning when we talk to Bob Larson, coming up in just a little over 10 minutes, right here on 590 WKZO. 3:39. Lawrence and Taylor, I'm the Taylor part of that equation. And thanks, and Chris in Richland, for being patient. How are you doing this afternoon, Chris?
Good, you?
Good. Did you get some snow at your place?
Oh, just a little. Just, about 10 inches.
Just a skosh, huh?
Yeah, just about 10 inches.
I'm assuming you called in regards to raising the minimum wage.
No.
Oh, okay. Then...
Actually,
pray tell.
A couple reasons. First of all, how would you describe that last source you were talking to, Gilda? How would you describe her organization?
A progressive think tank.
Okay, not unbiased, not a neutral source, right?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say they're not a good source. No, I wouldn't say they're biased. In general, they would be supportive of raising the minimum wage.
Yes.
Okay.
Because they're one of their goals is social and economic justice.
Yeah. Okay.
As opposed to regular justice. I just wanted to point that out first. But then, you know, a lot of the surveys, when they ask about, you know, should we raise the minimum wage, most people say, yeah, let's pay people more. But then when you counter that with the question of if it decreases employment, should we raise the wage? And that's what happens. And that's when it falls apart.
No, that argument falls apart, that it really doesn't decrease employment. And Chris, how would you explain New Jersey, where in the same election they reelected Chris Christie and then overruled his veto?
Uninformed people. That's how I win.
State of uninformed people.
Well, we got Barack Obama twice, so I would say that, you know, one state, hell, let's talk about 50 states, or 57 if you're, you know, the president. But, you know, the problem is in Michigan, it isn't the amount of wage that people are earning, it's the number of people who are without jobs. And that's what happens when you force, when government forces its priorities on businesses react, and usually not in a way that is beneficial to the people. So if you increase minimum wage, you will decrease the number of jobs, and you will increase more demand on the system because you'll have more unemployment.
Okay. And that's your thought.
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate your calling in and sharing that with us, Chris.
Yep.
Have a good one. 590 WKZO time is 3:42, and the first question I asked Chris was, did he get much snow at his place? I got a lot of snow at my place, Bob.
Do you know about how much? The reports that I'm seeing seem to be between 4 and 6, with lesser amounts north.
I'm west of town, and we got more than 6. I got to guess it was 8 inches.
Ooh,
I
okay.
did not go out in measure,
right.
But my front step had no snow on it, and I'm guessing there's 8 inches of this sloppy, wet stuff. Yeah. I'm a winter person, Bob, and I'm getting tired of it.
Well, it is technically still winter.
Yes, yes. That changes, what, a week from this weekend?
It changes the actual vernal equinox is a week from tomorrow, March 20th.
Oh, okay. And then when we continue to get snow, then we can be aggravated? Is that how it works?
Yeah, you know, this year, though, I think we're going to waive the aggravation rule, and by all means, be aggravated now, given what has happened over the past few months and the seemingly relentless nature of the snow or the cold. Although we did most recently have a nice taste of warmer weather, it's back again. And, you know, enough is enough.
Yeah. Well, NOAA confirmed that Lake Michigan broke the record for ice cover.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen every day.
No, and remarkable that it happened as late as it did, although we wouldn't break the record in November. It would take the whole winter to build up. So I guess it's maybe not as remarkable as it may seem. But typically, records of that nature, if they were going to be broken, probably would be more likely to occur the middle of February, not a week before spring.
Yeah.
But that's what has happened.
Well, the AccuWeather forecast says by Friday in the 40s.
Exactly.
Is that really? Tell me that's true.
Absolutely. And although we are officially saying, I think, 42 right now,
mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised if it ended up being 47 or 8 Friday afternoon.
From your lips to God's ear, my friend.
Yeah, how's that? That's the one positive I can draw from this. Always, of course, looking for the silver lining.
Thank
is that
you.
When moderation occurs this time of the year in March compared to February, January, it's typically much more dramatic. Even if in the overall big picture, this is only going to be a brief warm-up, warm-ups can still be much more impactful than what we had back in January when a warm-up was considered 30.
Yeah. Well, when I shoveled my front walk again today, as soon as I got it clear, it actually began to steam. Because there's so much heat in the sun
right.
that there was actually steam rising up as it evaporated away what was left.
And you talk about that sun, and to illustrate the point, we are, as I just mentioned, a week before the equinox.
Mm-hmm.
We're a week on the cold side of the equinox. If you were to go a week on the cold side of the vernal equinox, the autumnal equinox in September, that would be September 28th, roughly. So the sun has the same amount of energy and strength now as it does in the final days of September, if you can believe that.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
That late September sun really can do a number on the snow, so it will tend to melt much more quickly now than a few weeks ago.
Yeah. From your lips to God's ear.
I'm searching. I'm trying.
I know, and you're doing an admirable job. What is our word for the day,
well,
Bob?
The word is countdown, as in we are counting down the days to the arrival of spring. I was going to use that on Monday, and then I wasn't sure. We ended up, of course, being preempted by baseball.
Yes.
At that point, it was 10 days, so I thought that was appropriate, starting the countdown from 10, 9, 8. Well, we're down to 8 now.
Okay.
And in 8 days, it will officially be spring.
If we get to 3 below tonight, is that a record?
I don't have the actual record in chart in front of me. That's certainly going to be in the neighborhood of the record, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Records this time of year are typically range from a degree or two above zero to 5 to 10 below zero. So it's certainly going to be in the ballpark.
What does the long-term forecast, what does the trend look like?
Well, I was kind of avoiding that because I'm trying to keep the positive note, but that warm-up that we have on Friday is temporary because it gets colder again over the weekend, not severely so. We'll still be maybe near 40 on Saturday, upper 30s anyway. But for Sunday and for the better part of next week, it is going to be cold, certainly colder than average for the final week of winter and what will turn out to be the start of spring. Keep in mind, averages are on the climb. The average high right now is 43, 44 in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
My next week average is like 45, 46. So even a high of 40 is below average. So I'm not necessarily talking about a deep freeze, but I do believe pretty much all of next week is colder than average, with another chance of snow about Tuesday of next week.
Ooh. Well, at least I was impressed with 42 on Friday, but that's not abnormally warm. We're getting close to normal at that point.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, well, when you've been down so long, that looks like up.
It does.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll remain in countdown mode, counting the days till spring.
Exactly, and at least, as we mentioned last week, it's now daylight savings time, and psychologically that tends to help. It didn't keep the snowstorm away, but it is nice having it light longer in the evening.
Well, it did shift its the time it was snowing by an hour.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, have a good one. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Roger.
Bob Larson, AccuWeather meteorologist. Let's take a quick check with George and Dowling. George has been waiting patiently. Hi, George. How you doing today?
Hi, Raj. Doing pretty good. I kind of agree with the last gentleman that called in general. I think that it's going to take and stifle business. If it doesn't take and reduce the number of jobs or the employment, as you claim, when the price of the dollar, big double, goes to $1.50, I have the option to drive on by McDonald's if I don't have to have that food.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been treating that as a luxury in my world. So it's basically going to hurt the businesses. But I was not calling about that. I wanted to say if we have, I'd like to know how they calculate this, living minimum wage. From what I can see, the people that are harping and probably do this don't realize that these people that are working for the minimum wage and griping about not making enough are the ones who get their needs, their wants satisfied first before their needs. They'll go out and buy a 60-inch big screen TV to have the biggest one on their block down there on Van Buren or someplace in Battle Creek or parts of Kalamazoo where you're at, and they'll go out and their kid will have a $100 pair of tennis shoes and several other things rather than pay the rent. And if they take care of all their needs first, the rent, the food, everything, they would probably be able to live on what they make. And I guess I don't know if there's a solution to that. My simple solution to my mind was when the employer gets ready to figure their pay and does their check at the end of the week, rather than give them the check, they take and issue money out to the necessities. They pay their landlord. They give them a food voucher and things like that. And then if at the end of that week they don't have enough left the next week, then they probably, have met their needs but not their wants. That'll be what they're griping about, not having the second big screen TV or the 10 lottery tickets they'd love to buy because they're going to be a millionaire next week.
So
people misapply their money. That's the problem.
So we don't have a poverty, wealth inequality problem in this country.
We are simply a country that
is awash in people who can't manage their finances appropriately.
We have a poverty and a wealth situation in this country, but the wealth ones are the ones who go out and work, get an education, and make more than the minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who are griping and that Kildare speaking for are those ones that skipped school when they were in high school, they quit, or were on drugs or something, and now they have a minimum wage job, and we're supposed to feel sorry for them.
And in your mind, there are not corporations like Walmart and McDonald's that deliberately use aid programs as a part of their compensation package, and that they are deliberately, you don't feel they're deliberately taking advantage of taxpayers.
Well, that's the trouble with us taxpayers. We haven't told our representatives we want less of that welfare for McDonald's and Walmart to take advantage of. And like my wife said earlier when I was talking about this, they ought to get a second job. Then they'd probably have enough to live on.
Okay, thanks, George. You have a good one. 590 WKZO time is 3:52. Joining us now, the Democratic candidate for the governor of state of Michigan, Mark Schauer. Mark, how you doing this afternoon? And I guess we just, I heard it go click. We will try to reestablish that link with Mark Schauer. What we're going to talk with Mark on is naming or renaming potholes in honor of the governor, referring to them as Snyder holes. Is that a fair approach? Is the governor single-handedly responsible for the state of the roads in Michigan? And it's our intent to talk with Mark Schauer about that. We're seeing a lot of press, even saw some temporary signs that were put up pointing at potholes. We seem to have dealt with our technical difficulty. Mark, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am great, Roger. How are you?
I'm just fine. Is it fair to refer to potholes as Snyder holes?
I want to come back to that in just a second if I could.
Okay.
I was glad to be able to hear the previous caller, and I know George from Dowling. I've known George a long time. Look, the minimum wage in Michigan is $7.40 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a parent with one child working full-time, earning $7.40 an hour, you're raising your child in poverty.
Right.
You know, get a second job. That's great. A lot of minimum wage earners do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and their children are in child care or extended child care. And look, I think we're better than that as a country to, you know, continue to see people working. And and by the way, most of those full-time workers are 80% of them are over age 20.
Mm-hmm.
Almost half of them are working full-time on a minimum wage. I think we're better than as a nation, as a state, to, you know, see our children living in poverty because their parent only earns $7.40 an hour. And, you know, I have a proposal that raises the minimum wage to getting it back to where it was in 1968, getting it in terms of its purchasing power.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, look, maybe, you know, George should live on $15,300 a year and, you know, and see how that works.
Right.
It's, we can do better than that. And the other point is it's good for our economy and, you know, employers see less turnover in their employees. And you're exactly right in terms of sort of the taxpayer subsidy for these companies that are paying their workers minimum wage. The projection is raising the minimum wage to, you know, in the neighborhood of $10 an hour would remove 10,000, I'm sorry, let me try that number again, 110,000 people from the food stamp rolls.
Mm-hmm.
So these companies are essentially allowing the taxpayer to subsidize them for paying their workers a poverty wage. So on to potholes.
Yes.
I don't know what we call them. I call them expensive to our cars. I call them dangerous, as you know, drivers do the pothole slalom to avoid driving into one. You know, they hurt the quality of our communities and our ability to compete with other states for employers and jobs. And so I think as I've done in my career, I've stepped up and supported, you know, a comprehensive fix to fixing our roads and bridges. I did that when I was just in my first term in the state house, and John Engler was governor then, and we did that as a legislature in a bipartisan way. And when I was in Congress, I was there, you know, we made available almost $900 million to Michigan to help fix our roads and bridges. And, you know, we need a new governor to help us lead to make sure we can put together the resources that we need to fix our roads and bridges and infrastructure and sort of remove us from the status of being 50 out of 50 in the country and being the lowest spending per capita on our infrastructure.
Well, somehow we have to begin to understand that deferred maintenance on infrastructure is deficit spending. Can't decide You're never going to fix the roads. They're going to have to be fixed at some point, and it just gets increasingly more expensive to do it.
You know, it's you and I are old enough to remember the old Fram oil filter commercial, right? It's pay now or pay later.
And right.
That's exactly what it is with our infrastructure. You know, there is a life cycle to roads, and if they go beyond the point of preventive maintenance, then it becomes much more expensive. And that's where we are as a state. And you know, look, you know, $100 million, you know, looks like the legislature is going to appropriate partly to the state, partly to counties, and then partly to cities and villages. That's helpful. But the real intent of that is that's to pay for salt. That's to pay for plowing of our roads and sort of backfilling for all of the, you know, the big expenditures from this really tough winter. And maybe there's a little bit left for filling of potholes, but that's really what all it will be able to do is fill some of the potholes. And, you know, we need the legislature to step up and provide a long-term fix. And, you know, that will be a top priority of mine as governor for sure.
I think that's the key. We need to think long-term, not month to month. Mark, if people want to learn more about your candidacy, where would they do that?
You can go to my website, markschauer.com. It's M-A-R-K-S-C-H-A-U-E-R, markschauer.com, or on Facebook, Schauer from Michigan. The campaign is going great. Definitely, I'm having fun as I travel the state, although I'm encountering some roads in terrible condition.
I understand. Thanks, Mark, for your time.
Raj, thank you. Good to talk to you.
WKZO Kalamazoo.